Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 188 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and oh my, her mental strength today. Yeah, we have a terrific show, and we have a repeat guest, Amy Morin, who's going to be sussing out all of that for us. But before we begin, just know the episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because we're just sitting around waiting for your feedback. We love to hear from you. Okay, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Huh. So exactly what do mentally strong people concentrate on doing and not doing to achieve that and stay that way? Well, we have Amy Morin, who is a licensed clinical social worker, college psychology instructor, and psychotherapist. She's the author of the national bestseller, 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do, as well as 13 Things Mentally Strong Women Don't Do. You remember that little podcast we had? Amy serves as Very Well's parenting teens expert and child discipline expert, and is a regular contributor to Forbes and Psychology Today. Oh my gosh, it's all about mental strength, isn't it, Amy? Welcome back to the Her podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so, you know, you wrote 13 Things Mentally Strong Women Don't Do. So now you've written 13 things mentally strong people don't do. So what's the difference? What happened? How did that segue?
Well, so my first book was The 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. And then I started getting lots of questions from parents in particular, which led to my second book, 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do, all about how to raise mentally strong kids. And from that, I started getting lots of questions from women. Some of it was from moms who had read my parenting book. Some of it was from parents, dads who were saying, how do I raise mentally strong daughters? But so many women from around the world were asking, how do I build mental strength in today's world? So that's what led to that book about what mentally strong women don't do.
I love it. I love it. And so you've got key takeaways for women at different stages of their life, because Lord knows we have countless stages. We've got a full spectrum just to kind of keep us busy here. And, you know, I'm looking at all of the things that you enumerated in the 13 Things Mentally Strong Women Don't Do. I like the whole nuance with the don't piece of this. I love, you know, going through these time and time again to remind myself about that whole issue of really, at the end of the day, resilience, isn't it?
It really is. And a lot of people will say, well, I would write a book about what not to do. But as a therapist, I found sometimes it just took one or two bad habits to hold people back, and they're counterproductive. No matter how many good habits you have, if you're engaging in any of these bad habits, they'll keep you stuck. And so when I wrote the women's book, I wanted to research, well, what are the bad habits that are holding women in particular back? And about to say women are weak, or women are struggling with these things because of their own fault. But I found there were so many societal pressures, cultural things, just slight differences in the way that we raise girls compared to boys. And so it's just about saying, all right, there's so much out there about what you should be doing. I just wanted to talk about, well, just give up one or two bad habits, and all of a sudden, all of your good habits will become much more effective.
You know, I was looking at chapter 11 when you specifically say they don't stay silent. Oh, boy, it was that timely with Me Too and all the rest of it. I bet you just sort of raised your eyebrow and said, yeah, I'm really happy I put that in there. I mean, in more ways than one.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and to be clear, if you don't tell somebody, let's say you underwent something traumatic and you decide not to tell anybody, that doesn't mean that you're weak. but harboring deep secrets will drain your mental strength over time. So it's important to speak up and tell somebody, even if you decide not to go to the authorities or you don't report somebody. Maybe you just decide to tell a friend, you see a therapist, but it's all about finding your authentic voice and speaking up.
All right. So we've got the Me Too part of that, staying silent. But there's also, there you are in the business meeting and you're silent. What's going on with that?
Yeah, we find that women speak up on average 75% less than men in a business meeting. And so, of course, some people say, well, that's because women are just more efficient with their words. Well, studies show that women can be more efficient, but it also shows the more women talk, the more persuasive they are, the better able they are to get things done. But it's sort of this cultural thing that we're seeing where men just seem to dominate business meetings. And if women don't speak up and try to make their voices heard, then they end up taking a back seat. And that's one of the reasons why we see so many men advancing in the workplace, is because women aren't getting the airtime. So it would be so helpful for business leaders to specifically ask women for their opinion, to make sure that men aren't interrupting the women. And then as women who are participating in meetings, to make it a goal. Say, I'm going to speak up in this meeting. I'm going to say something. And if somebody interrupts me, I'm going to keep talking. I'm going to make it clear that my voice deserves to be heard, too.
Absolutely. You know, you also are looking at this whole modern day dangers that women face, everything from social media, cyber sexism, you know, and what do mentally strong women do and don't do when facing these dangers?
I think the most important thing that women do is just knowing, well, what are your values, and knowing how do you act according to those values. Sometimes it's easy to let tough circumstances and bad people bring out the worst in us, or we start to behave in a way that's counterproductive. It sabotages us. So it can be all about knowing, what are my values? What's important to me? And how do I want to behave? What kind of positive action can I take? And even if you can't fix the situation, you can't go back and change something that happened to you, you can still choose to make today as good as possible, and you can choose to make somebody else's life better. It's all about the choices that you make. And in order to make positive choices, you got to make sure that you're in the right mindset, that you're thinking in a way that is helpful and that it's healthy, and that you're managing your emotions. When you're overly upset about something, you might do things you regret. Or when you're down and disappointed or embarrassed, you might say, might end up withdrawing. It's really important to just manage your emotions, to think realistically, and to say, how do I behave as productively as possible given the circumstances I find myself in?
I love it. I want to whip through some of these points that you made in the book, because I just think that they're just spot on. The first one is, all right, all you little Her podcast listeners, how many of you compare yourselves to other people? Just what I thought. Everybody's hand goes up. It's like, oh, I wish I had her hair. I want her body. I want her job. I want her, you know, partner. I want her, you know, it goes on and on. How does a woman stop doing that?
And one thing is to just become more aware of it. You know, studies will show, take Instagram, for example. When you're scrolling through Instagram, nobody really scrolls through Instagram and it says, goodness, I feel so good about myself, especially if you're looking at fitness models or people who tend to be wealthier than you are. And so just becoming more aware of your habits. How much time do you spend on social media, or how much time do you spend reading magazines that encourage you to compare yourself to other people, and set some limits? And then second of all, when you catch yourself comparing yourself to somebody, maybe it's in real life. Maybe you're looking at your neighbor thinking she's prettier than I am, or your coworker thinking she's smarter than I am. It's to reframe the way that you think. Look at other people as opinion holders rather than your direct competitor. Just to remind yourself, this person has some sort of knowledge, skill, something I can learn from, rather than this person is better than I am. And studies will show when you do that, it helps to improve your mood. It doesn't take the same toll on you as it does when you start to think other people are either above or below you.
I love it. And that sort of segues into the next one, which is, you know, women who are strong don't insist on perfection. Aha, the P word. So how do you get yourself out of perfection? Because, you know, it's an interesting thing. I'll put money on it, and I'm sure there have been great studies on this, that is very gender specific. Women just tend to be perfectionists. It's got to be just so. Men actually look for the minimal they need to do to be able to get the maximal benefit. They're actually very smart in that respect. But how can a woman just sort of skirt that whole issue of perfection?
And you're right. There are a lot of studies that show that just because of the subtle differences in the way we raise girls compared to boys, that we do tend to be perfectionists. So I think it's, first of all, just recognizing your perfectionist tendencies. Sometimes we use it as a badge of honor. You know, how many times do you hear somebody say, well, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and they're sort of like proud of it. But to know that perfectionism, you have to sort of identify, what does it cost you to be a perfectionist? And maybe it just takes so much time. In the end, it'll sabotage you because you won't get as much done. You won't do anything where you might fail. It's hard to make a mistake. So just to realign the way that you think about your expectations of yourself. High expectations are healthy. Perfectionism isn't. When you catch yourself falling into the perfectionism trap, just remind yourself that it's okay. Don't take yourself so seriously. You can make mistakes and nobody's expecting you to be perfect.
Well, yeah. And I always tell, people that perfectionism equals paralysis. You can't get off first base. Because there's just no way to start. It's a non-starter. You're dead in the water if you think that you're going to do anything perfectly. I say celebrate all your little warts and freckles. That's you. Rock on with it and make it work for yourself. There's something else women do, too, and this is another point you make. Strong women don't overthink everything. Sometimes I think that women have like a little, you know, mental Cuisinart going on up there. They just take a thought, throw it in there, you know, hit chop and high, and that sucker goes round and round. And then and they just start killing it with overthinking. How does a woman kind of calm all that down?
So the first thing is to just recognize, are you problem solving or are you overthinking? When you're overthinking, maybe you're rehashing a conversation that you had with somebody earlier in the day. Maybe you're worrying about all the bad things that could happen tomorrow. Or you just keep replaying things in your head over and over, and that's not helpful. If you're looking for solutions and you're problem solving, by all means, you can keep going. But I would say 9 times out of 10, we're not doing that. We're just sort of dwelling on the problem. We're dwelling on our distress, making things worse. So if you catch yourself overthinking, then you just need to do what we call change the channel in your brain. And that might mean you're going to get up and go do something so you stop thinking about it. If you just sit there and tell yourself, don't think about all the bad things that happened today, you're not going to be successful. Your brain thinks about it even more. But if you, maybe you call a friend and talk about a completely different subject, maybe you go do something else that gets your mind off of it and just let it boost your mood. And then when you feel better, you won't be as likely to keep overthinking everything.
Well, I love that. And then you have some other points that really speak to, you know, which voices are you listening to in your brain? So, for instance, you say strong women don't let others limit their potential. Someone's saying, oh, you can't do that. Oh, no, 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 no. You're not strong enough. You're not smart enough. You're not fill in the blank enough. And there's another one. They don't blame themselves when something goes wrong. So what they're doing is they've created their own voice that says, you moron, how did you do that? I mean, shoulda, coulda, woulda, should never have done that. And then that, of course, goes into the overthinking and the perfectionism thing. You see how they're all intertwined here, obviously. But listening to those voices, how do you smack those voices right out of your head, the ones that fill you with self-doubt?
Yeah, so I think sometimes it's about recognizing, okay, is this helpful or not helpful way of thinking? And one of the best ways to describe it is to say, well, what would you say to a friend who came to you with this problem? We tend to speak to other people so much kinder than we do ourselves. So when you make a mistake, but then you're engaging in toxic self-blame, for example, beating yourself up, telling yourself you're worthless, all of those things are going to hold you back and keep you stuck. But if your friend called you up and said, gosh, I made this mistake today, you probably wouldn't say, well, you're worthless, you're an idiot, all those same names you call yourself. So just take a step back and say, what would I say to my friend who had this problem? And then give yourself that same advice. Talk to yourself with those same kind words. And another thing you can do is just write yourself a kind letter. Maybe it's 3 sentences long that just reminds you, okay, you've got this, you're a human being, you're going to make mistakes, but you're okay. Something to that effect. Put it in your purse, carry it around in your pocket. And then when you catch yourself degrading yourself, thinking all of this doom and gloom kind of stuff, you just pull it out and read it and to just kind of get a grip for a minute and remind yourself that you are good enough, that you can do these things, that you're not a terrible, horrible person. And it helps break that cycle.
I love it. You know, it's that whole issue of, really believing in yourself and really remembering that it's not great to take everything personally. I think women take things much more personally than men. Again, I'm being gender specific, yeah. But I somehow read a whole lot of studies that sort of say that, because that goes hand in hand with the perfectionism and the rest of it. If you buy into perfectionism and that, you know, I have to always follow the straight and narrow and do it absolutely, you know, by the rule, then, you know, if something goes wrong, of course you're going to take it personally. How else can you take it? Do you find that, Amy?
I do, that women tend to take things more personal, and they tend to view their behavior as more egregious than men do. So, for example, there did studies where they said, if you called a friend and woke them up in the middle of the night, how bad would that be? Men were kind of like, not so bad. Women, on the other hand, were like, it'd be terrible. I'd feel awful if I woke somebody up, and then they retired the next day and beat themselves up about that. So I think that's just one example of why sometimes women apologize more. We beat ourselves up more about things. We hold ourselves into this such high regard sometimes that our expectations are impossible to meet. And then it affects how we view the world, how we behave, how we interact with other people, how we feel about ourselves.
You know, this reminds me of a great story. I'm a triathlete, and I remember, you know, sometimes I'll do women's triathlons, you know, and they're hysterical, as opposed to like a male and female triathlon, because once you hit the water, right, if you're doing male, you know, men are in there with you, they usually do it in age waves, so you have male and female in your age wave. And, you know, a guy bangs into you. I mean, he just bangs into you. He swims right over you, whatever, doesn't matter, you know, and you're getting elbowed and back and forth. In a women's triathlon, and obviously when I'm in any triathlon and a woman is doing her thing and she bangs into you, I swear, right in the middle of the water, she goes, I'm so sorry. I'm like, what?
Interesting.
It's hysterical. Oh my gosh. It is absolutely a scream to watch this. First time it happened, I mean, it was like, I was just blown away. Like, I can't believe she just said that to me in the middle of the flipping water. But they keep doing it. And you'll even get that when you're swimming in the pool doing your round and rounds in the 25 meter, say in master swimming, excuse me, pardon me, you know, and a guy that swims right over you. It is not because they're idiots.
I love that.
Or something.
That's a great example of just how, you
isn't
know, we
that
do our
funny?
Behavior. And yeah, fascinating.
I know. And so I always, you know, keep that in mind when I'm thinking of women, as they just constantly over apologize for everything. I mean, it's sweet, it's lovely, but it just makes me smile. What can I say? You know, the other thing women do that men tend not to do as much of, obviously everyone does it, is, you know, put themselves down, you know. Men will oftentimes tend to externalize, and they'll say, nah, you know, Joe over there, he's the guy who did this, you know, and externalize the blame and say, this, you know, project didn't go well. But a woman will say, oh no, you know, this was all about me. And, you know, I didn't follow through. I didn't do well. Didn't perform the way I'm supposed to. And we're right back to shaming, blaming, and going into that place. Have you found that too, Amy?
I have. And, you know, one of the studies I talk about in the book is about how when we encounter problems, women are more likely to then address how they feel and to try to fix their feelings, whereas men are like, I'm going to fix the problem. So if a man has an interaction with his boss he doesn't like, a man is more likely to then confront the boss, try to resolve the problem, whereas a woman is more likely to beat herself up for the conversation she had or think I should have said something differently and try to figure out, how do I make myself feel better? I'm going to vent to my friends, versus just fixing the problem. And I think that goes back to your point that women often personalize things, they internalize it, and they just say, I need to fix myself, or I should have done something differently, rather than saying, you know, how do I take the bull by the horns and make this situation better?
I'm wondering whether or not that's true, whether your boss is a male or female. If it's a guy, I can clearly see the whole guy, you know, woman exchange. Mm-hmm. What if it's a woman? What if it's a woman
who
said,
question.
Wow. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And I think that's a fair question. And, you know, women tend to place more value on relationships. So maybe if it's a female boss, maybe the woman and the female boss can have a conversation and it makes sense to try, how do we fix this versus, how do I fix my relationship? How do I feel okay with this versus just, you know, my boss is a jerk and I'm fine with that, that a male may have. So it's an interesting question.
Huh. Okay. And, you know, there was something, it was curious. One of your, last elements in this whole, what strong women don't do is they don't feel bad about reinventing themselves. What did you mean by that?
Well, I'll have so many women come into my therapy office and they'll say, well, I'm a shy person, so I can't possibly now become a good salesperson. And it's because they were sort of labeled as a shy kid and they grew into that label. And now they think, all right, even though I'm 40 years old, that's me. So I can't possibly reinvent myself into an outgoing person who's good at sales, or somebody who maybe wants to embrace spirituality at the age of 60 and says, well, you know, now I'm just really interested in meditation and yoga and doing all of these other things of my life, but I'm not known for that. So I'm kind of scared. Sometimes it's about getting a new career. Sometimes a stay-at-home mom says, I don't know what to do with my life now that the kids are grown. All sorts of ways that women can reinvent themselves. But so many women are afraid to do that. They're afraid of, what if I break outside the mold? Or what will people think of me? Or if I don't live up to this label and this picture of who I am that other people have always held, then what will that mean for my relationships? And I was talking to somebody the other day, and she said, no, people aren't really afraid to reinvent themselves. I see women do this all the time. And I said, we see it all the time, but I think there's a lot of women who are also just terrified of doing something different, of being different. So, but we know that your personality changes, your life changes, every season of your life. It's okay to bring out new facets of your personality, to develop new interests, and to become more like the person you want to be.
You know, this couldn't be more apropos, especially since so many women are now coursing through their, 50s and 60s and doing a massive amount of reinvention. You could see this all the time, just pivoting and doing something, that no one would ever believe they could do. But I agree with you. I think a lot of women out there are gripped with fear, like, the old what if this happened? What if that happened? Which really brings us to one of the elements that you brought up that I consider to be kernel to everything you wrote in the book, which is strong women don't avoid tough challenges. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So, whether it's a promotion or it's I'm saying I'm going to have this tough conversation with somebody, it's all about knowing that you can face your fear and taking the leap. And I think for women, a lot of times, even though we were told certain things as little girls, maybe you were told, well, you can be anything you want, we don't see examples of astronauts and engineers and presidents who are women. And I think that affects us over time, even though we are told you can do anything you want, until you really see examples of it, or until you're really given that extra boost of, yeah, you can do it too, and then you really mean it, that it's tough to take the leap. And there's so many studies out there about, women not taking on these challenges just because they're filled with self-doubt or because other people have limited their potential. There's so many reasons, but it's all about practicing. It's all about putting yourself out there, about knowing you can do it, and then supporting one another as women too.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Everyone out there, we've been talking to Amy Morin. That's M as in Mary, O-R-I-N. She is the author of 13 Things Mentally Strong Women Don't Do, as well as 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. Both books are absolutely superb. I'm going to quickly run down the 13 items for women. Okay, take notes, girlfriends. All right. They don't compare themselves to other people. They don't insist on perfection. They don't see vulnerability as a weakness. They don't let self-doubt stop them from reaching their goals. They don't overthink everything. They don't avoid tough challenges. They don't fear breaking the rules. They don't put others down to lift themselves up. They don't let others limit their potential. They don't blame themselves when something goes wrong. They don't stay silent. They don't feel bad about reinventing themselves. And, dun-da-da, drum roll, they don't downplay their success. That means if someone says, you did phenomenally well, Rock on with your bad self. Just simply say, "Why, thank you very much. I sincerely appreciate what you just said. What kind words." Instead of, "Nah, I didn't do that. No, I wasn't that good." All right. So yes. That was something we didn't really talk about, but I really think this is, you know, this is such an important book for women. If anything, it's an eye opener. It's a wake up call. So again, everyone out there, the 13 things mentally strong women don't do. And that is written by Amy Morin. And what is the best website for everyone to learn about your wonderful work, Amy?
My website is Amy Morin, LCSW, is in licensed clinical social worker.com.
Excellent. And Amy, thank you so much for being on the Herb Podcast once again. And everyone out there, hit iTunes right now. Rate and review this show. This has been superb. I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed doing this episode. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Herb Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Herb Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.